Hello, you wrestling fanatics, and welcome to another episode of Reed's Wrestling. I am your host, Alan Reed, and I will be reviewing the February 8th edition of Raw. Now we're going to get straight into the action. So the night starts off with Adam Pearce in the ring, and he introduces Shane McMahon. Surprisingly, Shane is actually here, and we haven't seen him in months. So it's one of those quirks of being on the road to WrestleMania and seeing all these surprise appearances. So having Shane come back for however time we're going to get him, I think is one of the greatest perks we can get. So then Adam starts to say that Drew McIntyre is actually going to defend his WWE Championship inside Elimination Chamber. That came out of nowhere. Wow. So then the opponents for Drew McIntyre is going to be Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy, AJ Styles, The Miz, and Sheamus, all being former WWE champion. And then Shane just quickly says that Adam's been doing a great job on Raw, and he's very proud of him and how he's running the show. And that's basically it for Shane McMahon's appearance. It was short and blunt, but hey, I'll take anything when Shane comes out. And Shane, for some reason, he just brightens up the show when he comes out. So it's great. So then AJ Styles comes out and AJ starts pushing Adam Pearce's button. He starts talking smack, and then he calls Adam Pearce a dumbass. Of course he would. When he has almost behind him, he can say whatever hell he wants, because why not? So then the first match of the night is Jeff Hardy versus AJ Styles, two of the guys that will be in the Elimination Chamber. So the match is pretty straightforward. They get into it, but then Jeff Hardy ends up messing up his left leg after jumping from the rope. So then from there on, AJ brings the pain to Jeff Hardy and works on Jeff Hardy's injured leg inside and outside the ring. AJ ends up doing a calf crusher on Jeff Hardy, but Jeff Hardy ends up escaping, and Jeff Hardy, being the veteran that he is, he fights through the pain and starts taking it to AJ. But then Jeff Hardy, being the daredevil that he is, first off, he does a twist of fate. He gets on the rope. He does a swanton bomb, and it misses AJ Styles. So then AJ does another calf crusher, and then this time Jeff Hardy taps out. But I'm not going to lie, this, for it being the first match of the night, it was a very good start. I mean, I think if it wasn't for Jeff Hardy injuring his knee, I think we would have had a more high intense match, but it is what it is. So then we move on to Keith Lee and Riddle backstage, and Riddle comes up to Keith Lee and starts talking about how everything that happened to him last week, he brushed it off, and he's been watching Air Bud movies, and it's inspired him to keep moving, which is, I guess, kind of a weird way of putting it, but it's Riddle, and Riddle is that cool dude. But Keith Lee actually looks at him and kind of looks worried, kind of like, hey, did Bobby Lashley like knock you out that badly last week that you're talking about Air Bud movies when, you know, Keith Lee and Riddle are gonna wrestle tonight? So then he actually looked concerned for Riddle's health. And I mean, I agree with Keith Lee, because Riddle's kind of looks like he was like on a perk or something. He was kind of like jittery and out there, and I mean, God knows what's going through his head with that beating that Lashley gave him last week. So I mean, we're gonna have to wait and see what happens with Riddle and Lashley and whoever else gets involved. So then we move on to The New Day versus T-Bar and Slapjack of Retribution. And here we go again, another week of these two factions just going at it together. But before I get more into that match, I had an idea about this whole Retribution New Day thing. So Retribution lately has been making it very personal with this, right? With this whole thing, right? So why not make it even more personal, and they go to SmackDown and they show Big E being held hostage by Retribution? Or what if they show Retribution brutalizing Big E backstage? Doesn't have to show any craziness, but shows like, hey, we can come to this show where supposedly one of your members is safe, but in reality, he's not safe because we do whatever the fuck we want. So that's an idea that I wish that they would do, which I think would be great. But that's something we would have to wait and see. But then for the match, we have Mustafa Ali on commentary, and he keeps saying how WWE is crazy for allowing him to be on commentary because he can say a lot of things about this corrupt company. And truth be told, there is a lot of truth behind that comment, because the guy has, he said, quote unquote, a lot of truths about the company lately on Twitter and stuff. But remember, WWE nowadays use Twitter and Instagram to play out storylines and make it seem more real. So, but at the same time, he has gotten in trouble for saying a few things that he shouldn't have said. So then Ali on commentary, he just kept saying how the New Day is a corporate puppet, and how they do what they're told. You know, they say mow the lawn, they'll mow the lawn. If they say get a haircut, they get a haircut. So Ali just kept bashing on that for the majority of the match. But then we have T-Bar, who manhandles Kofi Kingston in the ring and showing his true powers, which he should be. The guy is fucking massive. I mean, they need to show him throwing people around to see how terrifying this man can be, really. But then Kofi ends up flying out of the ring and he hits both T-Bar and Slapjack. And Slapjack, he's one of those people that I feel like he will be the breakout star of Retribution if Retribution was to ever break up in the future. I hope they don't. But I really hope like far future, maybe like 7 years. Because there's something in Slapjack that I see more than T-Bar. Because T-Bar is, sure, he's massive and he's powerful. And hey, for all we know, he can be another Roman Reigns. But Slapjack just has like that, like, I call it like the cool, like the silent cool. Like he can do something big. So I actually kind of want to see if Slapjack will continue to do something big. So then back to the match. So then we have Woods going for a tag on Kofi, but then T-Bar kicks Kofi out of the corner and T-Bar clotheslines the hell out of Xavier Woods. But then Kofi gets tagged in, and the complexion of the match does change because Kofi's being energized. He does all his fast-paced moves. He takes everyone out. And then clearly he does a daybreaker from the New Day for the victory. And so before I move on, I will agree with most of the WWE universe that WWE has really like destroyed Retribution. I mean, when they first debuted, you know, before we had the official members, you know, they came in, they destroyed the ring, they chainsawed the ropes, you know, and then they started doing this promos backstage with their voices distorted. And it was one of those things that was like, oh, this is supposed to be like a very ominous team, like a team that, hey, these are rejects and they want revenge, and we're gonna get our revenge whichever way we want. But then they just, WWE so slowly started making this into a team, into like, hey, they're vulnerable, anyone can beat them if you outsmart them. So I do agree with most of what people are saying, and it's sad, really. So then we have Ric Flair coming out, and you know, the styling and profiling, son of a bitch. And then a Lacey Evans ends up joining Ric Flair, and then Ric Flair gets on the mic and says why he's actually here, why he's actually with Lacey Evans, and it's because he doesn't take shit from anyone, not even his daughter. So okay, so you're just trying to prove that just because your daughter doesn't like this girl, it means you're gonna go for that girl? I mean, it's one of those works that I just don't get. So then Lacey says that she treats him like the way he should be treated, like a living legend. And then that's when Charlotte Flair ends up coming to the ring. And then Charlotte literally says that Ric Flair is surrounded by yes people, that anyone around him will say yes. Get me a milk, yes. Get me a beer, yes. So then Charlotte calls out Lacey Evans and calls Lacey Evans Charlotte 2.0. Lacey Evans says that, stipulation actually, says that if she was to beat Charlotte in a match, that Lacey Evans will be the number one contender for Asuka's women's title. And you can see that Ric Flair wanted to keep that secret, because in the background he's just like, shit, she just literally ruined everything. So then Lacey drives Charlotte to a steel steps after challenging her to a match. And then Charlotte challenges Lacey into a match on Raw, and then Lacey accepts. So then we have Lacey Evans versus Charlotte Flair. Charlotte takes it to Lacey in the beginning of the match. Like, she really pops off and does anything she can to just knock her ass out. But then Lacey works on Charlotte's shoulder, so another quote-unquote injury for tonight or whatever. And then I'll be a few to admit that, or maybe there's more to admit. I'm not sure, but I might be in the lesser realm. But I do feel like Lacey Evans is ready for a title run. She deserves it. She really does. But then Lacey mocks Charlotte in the ring with Ric Flair's signature dance. And then Charlotte, you know, shows Lacey Evans how it's really done. And then Charlotte does massive chops to Lacey's chest. And then big boot to Lacey Evans. Charlotte does a big boot to Lacey Evans. Then Lacey Evans, at this point, is impressive. She takes the pain. She's bringing it again. Like I said, she's ready for a title run. I mean, I don't know what the hell they're thinking of not giving her a title. She deserves to be right there next to Charlotte Flair. So then Charlotte Flair does a massive spear to Lacey, almost literally breaking her in half. And then Charlotte starts talking shit to Ric Flair and basically says, like, oh, you want her to go against Asuka? I got you, bro. I got you. So then Charlotte literally disqualifies herself and she beats the fuck out of Lacey Evans in the ring, knocking her ass out. And then Ric Flair comes in and breaks it up. And then there's the father and daughter stare down. Both of them just not liking each other. That's the end of that story for the time being. So then we move on to Edge WrestleMania update. Who is Edge going to face at WrestleMania? The anticipation is high as hell for this one, because this guy is indecisive, or he's making us seem like he's indecisive. He comes out and says, like, hey, he's been face-to-face with the NXT champ, Finn Balor. He's been face-to-face with the Universal champ, Roman Reigns. And he's been in face-to-face with the WWE champion, Drew McIntyre. But now, with the WWE Championship on the line at Elimination Chamber, he doesn't know if Drew McIntyre is going to make it to WrestleMania as the champion. So then, good old fashioned, The Miz interrupts. And he says, if Edge was to win any title, he's going to be there to cash in his Money in the Bank contract. So then Edge starts saying, like, okay, so you're being stupid. You're telling me what you're going to do always. I'm the optimist. I'm the one that's opportunist, and you're supposedly strategizing, but yet you're telling me that once the bell rings and I'm champion, you're gonna come after me. So I already know that. So then with all that happened, which is pretty much everything that happens in that segment, I think it's pretty clear and obvious that Edge is gonna make his final decision on Elimination Chamber night. He might come out in the end of the WWE match and make his decision. That's my guess. So I would say Elimination Chamber in 2 weeks, he will make his decision who he is going to face. And I'm pretty sure we all know who he really is going to face. So then we move on to Damian Priest versus Angel Garza. And of course, Bad Bunny is in Damian Priest's corner. And again, this is Angel Garza is one of those people that makes me wonder, what if? Because supposedly Vince McMahon, you know, compared him to Eddie Guerrero, which is a very big pill to swallow. Because when the boss says, like, hey, you remind me of him, I mean, wow, that's a lot of weight on my shoulder. But yet there's nothing happening for him. It's like Vince. It's like, you know, Vince being Vince. One minute he's hot on this guy, but then tomorrow he wakes up and he's like, oh no, I don't think he can do what I want him to do. So he just moved on. And I feel like he did move on from Angel Garza. So it's one of those sad moments that I hope Vince, you know, realizes that, hey, this guy, he can bring something. Let's put him at least upper mid card instead of this lower mid card. So then during the match, I mean, it really wasn't anything. And Damian Priest literally took control of most of the match. It was, again, like a warm-up match for Damian Priest. Miz and Morrison distract Damian, and then Garza gets the offense for like a few minutes. That's me stretching it, maybe like 2 or 3 minutes. So then Bad Bunny ends up getting the briefcase and distracts Miz, and then Morrison takes the briefcase and goes into a ring, and then the ref literally makes Miz and Morrison leave the ring. So then Angel Garza is by himself. The Reckoning from Damian Priest, and he gets the pin. 1, 2, 3. I mean, like I said, not even a challenge for him. But again, this is just a build-up for him and Bad Bunny for WrestleMania, because there's already rumors and, you know, saying that, hey, Damian Priest and Bad Bunny are going to team up for The Miz versus for The Miz and Morrison match. So it's just a build-up. There's nothing there. So then we have Charlie Caruso interviewing Drew McIntyre, and Drew McIntyre is determined. Again, this whole thing is just circling around Drew and Sheamus, and Drew basically said, hey, instead of wasting 20 years of friendship, you could have just asked me for a match, and I would have given it to you. You didn't have to do all this hostility. But then Drew just doesn't care about who he has to face. He's just going to face everyone and just still retain his title. So then we have Riddle versus Keith Lee. Riddle quickly actually gets on Keith Lee into an armbar. Like, the bell rings, he locks on an armbar, and Riddle keeps trying to get him into a submission. But Keith Lee, I mean, that guy's fucking massive. He just overpowers him, slams him, and then Keith Lee does a massive tackle on Riddle. I mean, he literally sends him across the ring. I mean, that was a little Super Bowl homage, I think, because he pushed him to the middle of the ring. So for most of the match, it didn't seem like Keith Lee was breaking a sweat. I mean, he was actually, I feel like I said, more worried about what's wrong with Riddle's health and his mind, because he had a lot of moments where he could have actually hurt Riddle, but he decided to back down, kind of give Riddle a little bit of offense. But you can kind of tell that he was like, yo, my friend is kind of like not there, I don't know what to do. And yeah, so, but I mean, Keith Lee does a spear bomb on Riddle, and Keith Lee wins. Nothing, like I said, nothing special. It was mostly just to show off like the effects of the attack from last week on Riddle, and it also kind of shows Keith Lee being a dominant force in WWE. Even though it's like, hey, you're my friend, but hey, if I have to fight you, I'm gonna fight you. I'm gonna win. That's it. And then Lashley ends up coming out, and then Lashley chokeslams Keith Lee. I mean, dude, this guy, Lashley, has some insane strength. I mean, Keith Lee is 320 pounds. This guy is massive. And then Lashley ends up doing a hurt lock again on Riddle. And then Lashley starts to wreak havoc on Keith Lee outside the ring. So then we move on to probably the most unorthodox match of the night, or of Raw lately. We have Lana versus Nia Jax in a tables match. I mean, Lord have mercy, Lana cannot escape tables, I swear. I mean, Nia does two big ass power bombs on Lana, and then, dude, Lana is no match for Nia Jax. I mean, the poor woman is literally being toyed around, and then Lana uses her legs to put Nia over the top rope, which she does, but then Nia quickly gains her momentum, and back to Lana just being toyed around with. And then, surprise turn of the match, Lana pushes Nia through a table, and Lana ends up winning the match. Now, that was a cheap win, because that was literally a push, and that's it. And Nia just literally all her weight went through a table for no reason. So then we have Shayna Baszler jumping in on Lana, and then Naomi takes out Baszler. So then we move on to Naomi versus Shayna Baszler. I mean, early in the match, Shayna did again work on Naomi's left arm. I mean, tonight was literally the night of working on arms and legs, because everyone's apparently their arms and legs were fucked up, which I don't know what the hell they're thinking. So then Shayna puts her clutch on Naomi, and Naomi quickly goes for the bottom rope. And then Shayna ends up attacking Lana outside the ring, With that, Naomi rolls her over and then Naomi gets the win. That's probably the shocker of the night, to be honest. So then we move on to the main event, Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre. So then Drew takes control of most of the beginning of the match. It's a, you know, back and forth match. We've seen it before. Both men just know each other really well. They know how to reverse each other's moves. They know what's coming next. They know the finishers. So it was, there was nothing special. But Sheamus ends up running out, and then Drew gets distracted, and Orton ends up taking more of the offense from Drew, and then Sheamus literally ends up being like a ring force like a ring enforcer, and just eyeing both of them. So then, like I was saying earlier in the podcast, this whole elimination chamber is literally circling around Drew McIntyre and Sheamus, and it kind of feels like these two should have just been in a singles match instead of putting other people in this match, just to kind of make it more, I guess, more high stakes. But is this whole thing is literally about Sheamus and Drew McIntyre and the friendship, and there's no point in putting those people, but it is what it is. And then the whole Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton rivalry, it's one of those I think it's going to live on forever, when all these WWE producers don't know who to put these two up against, so they're just going to put them up against each other and see what they get out of it. I mean, don't get me wrong, these two, when they work together, they're good. I mean, they're A plus wrestlers. But it's one of those things that I guess I've personally seen it so much already in this like 2 months of 2021, that, you know, I kind of hope that they don't always put it on, and it's just like, oh man, we don't have no more opponents for these two guys, so let's put them together, because we know, you know, fans are gonna want to see them wrestle again. But I really hope they just end up moving on from this and just finding someone else. I mean, hey, they should have just done Drew McIntyre versus Sheamus tonight. I think that would have been way better as a build up for Elimination Chamber, and then they have Orton come in and interfere, and obviously, you know, being dominant. So then we have Randy Orton doing a superplex on Drew McIntyre, and he goes for the pin, and Drew kicks out. And then Randy Orton does his signature rope DDT, which I'm not sure if there's a specific name for that one, but I'm going to start calling it like the Viper DDT. It just seems appropriate for this. So then Randy Orton starts getting ready for an RKO, or starts smacking his hands on the ring. Drew reverses it for his own snap DDT. And then Sheamus ends up coming into the ring, and he bro kicks Randy Orton when he was aiming for Drew McIntyre. But then Drew McIntyre moves out of the way, and he knocks out Sheamus, and then it's a disqualification. So there's that. As a main event of Raw, I mean, there was nothing to it. It was just a show filler. I would have been better with Drew McIntyre versus Sheamus, but it is what it is. And speaking of Raw for February 8th, I'm actually shocked, but at the same time, I'm actually happy that there was no sign of like The Fiend or Alexa Bliss. There was no Firefly Funhouse or anything. I'm actually shocked about that, but at the same time, I'm glad that they're not overexposure on her, because it might get to the point that, hey, there's too much of her, of Alexa Bliss, that we're gonna get bored, or they're just thinking of something new to go through. But I do understand why she wasn't on Raw tonight, with real life personal problems that's happening in her life, you know, with her having this actual real life stalker on her ass, like sending her messages is disgusting, and how people really do that. And so I understand why they took her, they don't want her on the show tonight, and I really hope that does get sorted out with cops and legal terms in court, because you know she should, you should feel safe in your own house. And you know, this guy is saying like, hey, I know where you live, like you're gonna sleep together. I mean, dude, this guy is sick, and I really hope this guy just goes to jail. I mean, I'm really rooting for her to push through, and hopefully this does really get settled down. So yeah, that was a side note. That I hope gets sorted out. But yeah, it is a shocker, but I'm glad. So maybe a week or two of no Alexa Bliss or The Fiend or Firefly Funhouse or Alexa's Playground, it'll give us a breather. And when they do decide to bring her back, it'll be with something more fresh, a new idea, maybe something more creepier, maybe blood coming out of her eyes or out of her hair, you know, something creepy like that, which I mean, what more can I say? It'll be awesome and further the storyline. Hey, maybe an elimination chamber, Orton is seconds from winning, and then Alexa comes out, or The Fiend comes out, or something. I actually wouldn't be surprised if that was to happen. That'd be great. But as my rating would be for the February 8th edition of Raw, I'm going to give it a 6. It's another slow show. There was no highlights for me, to be honest. I guess the most highlight of the match of the night was really Lana winning the tables match with a cheap win, just pushing her through a table, and that's really about it. Really, nothing special happened. Sadly, they're just slowly building up. Maybe next week, with Elimination Chamber being that same week, they'll just do something to hype it up. But overall, it was a slow burner. That's okay. I mean, slow burners are good. I mean, we can't have everything we want in one night, because then what does that leave us with? So that was my review for the February 8th edition of Raw. I hope you guys keep listening to this podcast, and you can always follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Instagram at Allen Rules Dude. That's AllenRulesDood. And on Twitter, on Allen Rocks 2224. That's Allen, Allen Rocks, ROCK, the numbers 2224. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.